So after yesterday's talk that Arya offered about the essence of loving kindness and about the near and far enemies, today I want to switch kind of tracks a little bit and talk a little bit more about and focus a little bit more about the process that we undergo here when we practice metta bhavana, the process of how metta is developed. It's said in the Dhammapada in verse 183, to avoid all evil, to cultivate the good, and to purify the mind. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas. To avoid all evil, to cultivate the good, and to purify the mind. This is the essence of the teachings. And this is exactly what we're doing here when we practice metta bhavana. And we've come here really to fulfill these instructions that the Buddha gave us. And as Arya mentioned yesterday, the entire teaching of the Buddha boils down to the cultivation of wisdom and the cultivation of compassion. And the way to do that is not always so clear. The way the metta practice works is not always so clear. So today I want to talk a little bit about the various aspects of metta bhavana so that you have some context and some understanding about the process that unfolds as we do this practice. And why it's an invaluable and equal partner to the vipassana practice. So metta bhavana, metta meditation, the cultivation of metta, is twofold. As Saito said in his original instructions the other day, it can be done for the sake of developing concentration or for the sake of developing the metta itself. Or both, really. Whichever we do, we can't help but cultivate both. But it's a matter of emphasis. And concentration that we develop when we do this practice has its own rewards. Calm, peacefulness, a quiet and focused mind. But it's by developing the metta itself that transforms the heart, that transforms the mind. We see over and over again in the early Buddhist texts this phrase, metta citta vimutti, meaning the release of mind through loving kindness. And the release that is meant by that phrase, and meant in that phrase, is the release of suffering that's brought about by the practice and purification of metta bhavana. And this is a transformation that isn't magic. And it's really, you know, not by kind of waving a little metta wand over us that all the impurities of heart and mind vanish like that, poof, disappear. Don't you wish, you know? We come here to cultivate loving kindness, to cultivate this beautiful quality of friendliness, of universal interest, of compassion. To open our hearts to the way things are. And often within a couple of days, after the original excitement of being here and the happiness of actually getting here, die down, we begin to see a lot of other things. Things that get in the way. I put my fingers up there in quotes. Because They're not really in the way. I'll talk about this more later. But everything that isn't metta begins to emerge and be seen. In the interviews in the last couple of days, a number of people have described hindrance attacks, really strong and powerful experiences of dosa, ill will, or doubt. And this is natural. And really, it's the paradox of this practice that by meeting these difficulties in the practice, they ultimately become the source and the wellspring of this beautiful loving kindness and of the transformation, the release of the heart through loving kindness. And it's a lawful and progressive practice of purification. It's like cleaning. Cleaning here in Burma. Before you came, things weren't this nice as they are now. And little by little, the monastery has gotten cleaned up. And I'm sure in your rooms you've also kind of polished or been polishing. And you notice, don't you, when you do this at first, you don't notice the small things. You notice the big things. And then the more you clean, the more you notice, oh yeah, there's that dust in the corner, and ooh, the window, and oh, the mirror. The more you clean, the more you see the more refined things that need to be cleaned that weren't so obvious before. And in the same way, when we come to practice, we start with a heart and mind with its conditionings and whatever causes brought us here, not just to this place, but to this life, prone to all sorts of habitual mischief, and gradually, gradually, patiently, at an ever more refined way, the practice cleans it up. And this is the aspect of the metta practice that really can have a profound and lasting effect on our everyday lives. Because one of the wonderful things about metta bhavana is it enters the door of the Dhamma through our conventional lives, through our relationships. It doesn't deny that. It works with it. So we begin with ourselves, and then we go to all these other beings in our lives, and stuff comes up. And when in the practice we face whatever it is that's coming up, and then we go out in our lives, we find that a lot of that, even though it might be something that we developed here in the practice, that's not something we easily forget. Of course, we fall back on habits. But moments of freedom that we have here, moments of ease and peace and letting go that happen in the metta practice, are not easily forgotten. They're quite profound, actually. So this is what we carry out into our lives, and what has a lasting effect. So this purification of metta bhavana works on both the superficial level with mind states that we're conscious of day to day, and it also works at a deeper and more subtle level. So at the more superficial level, of course, you're all familiar with the hindrances, both intellectually and in your experience. These states of mind and heart that come up in the course of the practice that are very powerful and very difficult. Greed, ill will, restlessness, and remorse. sleepiness, doubt. These are universal experiences in the practice. And we tend to make them into problems. And they certainly are if we succumb to all the thoughts that kind of circulate around these mind states. Because if we succumb to these habitual patterns of reaction and identification with them as a personal problem, they can be a source of frustration, irritation, disappointment, self-judgment, discouragement. I really don't have to give any examples because I'm sure each of you has your own version of this. You know this very well, how some habitual pattern of mind will come. And we see it begin to arise, and then all of a sudden, something triggers it, and it's really, really strong. And we're suddenly stuck in thought loops about it. And it's building and building, the anger, for example, or the doubt. Oh, gee, you know, oh, that person, or about the practice here. Oh, I'm not sure this is the right practice for me, and it's so confusing, and oh, maybe I should leave. You know, it doesn't take very long to get from point A to maybe I should leave. So if we succumb to these habit patterns, if we believe the constellation of thoughts that revolves around the hindrances, they can be trouble. But this is the thing, they're just nature. The fact that they're arising is not personal. It's not your dosa or your doubt or your sleepiness or your problem. And sure, okay, maybe each of us has a particular version of this that it's our top tune, our favorite, quote unquote. But they're just arising because of causes and conditions and kamma. And they don't last all day long, every moment. They come and they go. And this unique mix that each of us has, it's easy to take that personally. Oh yeah, I'm so full of dosa. But the wonderful thing about this practice is that if we see these hindrances for what they are and just keep patiently and persistently plodding along with the cultivation of loving kindness, slowly, slowly, the mind settles. That verse of the Dhammapada is really explaining what it is. To cultivate the good. This is what we do when we are engaging in this practice. And when we cultivate the good, the mind is busy with other things and it can't get into so much trouble. So we just persistently bring the mind back. So with these overt hindrances, these kind of superficial level things, it's just a matter of keeping going with the practice. Sense of humor is really, really useful here. It's like, oh yeah, okay, that's a nice story. But not now, you know, I think I'll keep going with this metta. And then see what happens. And when we do this, then the practice, as it begins to deepen, gives us access to these deeper tendencies, these more subtle, latent tendencies of mind and heart. That we might not be so conscious of. And it's at this point in the practice when things can get, quote unquote, interesting. Because as the heart softens, as it opens, and the concentration and the metta build, these latent tendencies that emerge can be felt very, very profoundly and deeply. We may not have been so aware of them, and it can be a little disconcerting. Or perhaps we thought we got over that. Oh yeah, that fear thing, I'm over that. And there it is in 3D living color. Maybe we dismissed it as something unimportant, but we find it actually has a pervasive and strong influence on our entire life. And sometimes in the practice we remember things that we had completely forgotten about, things that we might have done that we regret. One time when I was doing intensive metta practice, I was just minding my own business, doing walking meditation. And in the middle of the lane, you know, halfway between one wall and the other, I had this vivid memory just flash into the mind of when I was in my early 20s, I worked as a vet tech for an equine veterinarian. And I was applying to veterinary school, and so she was teaching me techniques, you know, simple things like doing IV punctures and things like this. So in order to do this without causing harm, one thing that I had to do was to do the euthanizations. So this memory of having euthanized this beautiful horse that was just lame, you know, it had one bad leg. That was the only thing wrong with it. And the owner put it down, and I had to do it. And the memory of that, it felt like being hit with a telephone pole in the middle of the chest. It was so shocking. I'd done it and, you know, it had been out of the mind. But in the metta practice, these things can come up. And when they do, don't worry, this is natural. And all we need to do is to keep cultivating the loving kindness. Perhaps if we need to go back to ourselves, to stop for a moment to breathe, to feel whatever it is, let it be in the background and to keep the loving kindness going, however we can. And sometimes when latent tendencies like this and the deeper conditioning comes up, we tend to misinterpret that as situational, because a lot of stories can arise about whatever it is, and usually these stories take present conditions as an object, so we can be fooled into believing that the outer situation in the present moment is an issue. So maybe it's not a memory like that, but maybe it's some deep conditioning that we haven't fully digested. There's residue deep in the mind. And instead of having a vivid idea of what that's about, we find, for example, the mind is full of dosa about the monastery or the teachers or the metta practice. But that's just this latent tendency hooking on to present conditions. And if it weren't this situation, it would be something else. That kind of reactivity takes whatever is present as a trigger. So it's really important to take whatever stories the mind is telling with a big grain of salt. and with a really healthy and humorous skepticism. Just let that clatter away in the background. Whatever you do, don't follow those thoughts. Don't get stuck in reflections about them. Where is this coming from? Where is it going? That's actually unwise attention. But to simply acknowledge, be with, and gently, gently reincline the heart to, may I be well, happy, and peaceful, or may my benefactor be well, happy, and peaceful. And by not feeding the stories, by feeding the metta, we're robbing these tendencies of their fuel. It's a substitution of opposites, really. The more metta is being cultivated, the less energy in the mind is available for the hindrances. It can happen gradually, or it can happen like that in a moment, where the mind switches from one to the other. And we don't know if in the next moment this huge story we might have about some tendency or some hindrance can just vanish and be replaced by pure metta. It happens like that, and it's very surprising sometimes. Or it can be a gradual replacement. And really, with all of these, with the more overt hindrances or the deeper tendencies, it's, I know most of you know this, but it's important to remind yourself, this is lawful. This is in accord with the Dhamma. You're not doing anything wrong. You're not practicing in the wrong way. In fact, when deeper levels of the heart and mind become apparent to us, it's often a sign that the practice is deepening, that we're doing it correctly. We may have just come up against a deeper, new edge. And this is actually a necessary aspect of the metta practice and the deepening of the development of loving kindness. So this purification, this replacement that happens in the loving kindness practice is developed in a precise and sequential way. And we open the heart gradually to beings, starting with those that are easy, and little by little opening to wider and wider circles. And really the beauty of this form lies in its simplicity and the gradual widening of the heart's scope to encompass all beings everywhere, without exception. We start where it's easy and expand from there. So the other day in his talk, Sayadaw briefly described the sequence of categories that we use, and I know most of you are familiar with them, at least in a general way. And we use these different categories of beings as objects of our metta practice as a way to make the heart more flexible, more pliable, more resilient in the face of increasing challenge. So we start always where it's simplest, maybe not easiest, for most of us Westerners, but simplest, with ourselves. And we start here because we know for ourselves the experience of our lives. We have direct contact with that. We may not, quote unquote, love ourselves, but we know what it is to want to be happy. We know what it is to want to be healthy in a very direct and immediate way. So even if you can't, you know, completely love yourself, many of us as Westerners have a very hard time with that. But you know what it's like, you know, when you get a little tickle in your throat and you go, uh-oh, there's a cold going around. I hope I don't get sick. May I be healthy? That's metta. That's that wish for good health. It's very simple and down to earth. Or we're sitting here in the practice and, you know, a pleasant mind state disappears to be replaced by something distinctly less pleasant. And we think, oh, I want to be happy. That's also metta, so long as it's not laced with, oh, grasping. But the desire to be happy, this is simple metta. May I be happy? May I be peaceful? May I be healthy? So we know this for ourselves. And then we begin to widen the circle. Just as I want to be happy, so may you be happy. And we take this gradual widening as a way of connecting this immediate personal experience to the entire world of living beings, the entire universe. So, the respected person. This is a category that's where it's relatively easy to cultivate loving kindness. Not a lot comes up. Because, on purpose, the respected person is not usually somebody we know very well. But it's somebody in whom the goodness is really, really obvious. We see the goodness and are inspired by it or have benefited from it. And so this person brings up a lot of gratitude and well-wishing. The purification engine really begins to run when we go to the next category, which is the dear person. This is a person who we know very well, we're very close to. We naturally love. But because this is a person or a being with whom we have a relationship, yeah, you know relationships. Yeah, we love this person a lot. And there can be complications. With the dear person, the complication and what gets purified when we work with this category is attachment. That desire to always be with that person, or that fear of what will happen when something, you know, the inevitable comes and that person is gone from our lives. So that craving, that attachment, is what becomes purified with this category. Then we progress to a person we neither love nor hate. It's a person we don't know very well. I kind of like to think of this category as the invisible person. The person we just don't notice very much, that nothing much comes. It may be somebody we see every day, a bus driver or a cashier at the market. Somebody in the workplace we don't know. Or, you know, really neutral people, most of the 7 billion people on this planet. They're just names to us. We don't know them. So nothing much comes up from this person. But what gets purified with this category, of course, is delusion. The fact that we don't know this person, we don't see this person, They are just a name to us. But when the heart begins to open to these people with loving kindness, suddenly that neutrality, that sense of unknownness breaks down. And they begin to feel more like dear people to us, even if we don't know them at all. And then, of course, we come to what's traditionally called the enemy. Or if we want to start simply with this category, we just start with somebody we don't like very much, where there's this, ugh. And, of course, this is where dosa begins to be purified. Really, this is it's such a challenging category for many of us, especially when we begin to work with people who have hurt us or harmed us in some way, or people who inspire fear. Now, fear and anger are very closely related mind states. So often, this category takes a lot of continuity and a lot of persistence. And a whole constellation of unwholesome mind states can arise to be purified, from simple rage to more complicated emotions like jealousy, envy, spite, vindictiveness, the will and the wish that some harm come to them. And this category often involves the core issues of our present life, both in terms of our relationships in the present moment and in terms of our conditioning from the past. And to practice successfully in the metta bhavana with this group of people, with this category, it takes a particular vigilance about not following those stories. But it's also the category where the largest shifts can happen. And particularly for those of us who have strong conditioning and strong habits of self-judgment, sometimes people discover that the person in their category of enemy is themselves. And this can be very difficult to receive, but it really opens the heart. And a lot of compassion can kind of well up. It's like a whole spring of compassion begins to flow. So that purification of dosa, whether it's directed outwardly or inwardly, that replacement of dosa with loving kindness, takes some time, takes some patience, but it's inevitable if we keep going. And once we're successful with this category, then we open to all beings. And this is where the heart is asked to open as widely as is possible. And with this category, this is where the purification that's already happened becomes firmly established, broadened, and strengthened. So through this sequential development and through the gradual strengthening of the loving kindness that happens when we go through this sequence of categories, when we get to all beings and we've developed the metta, there's no longer any difference in the metta that arises for all beings, for the enemy, for our dearest friends, for our benefactor, for ourselves. All these internal barriers that we build with greed, with aversion, with judgment, with hatred, with longing, with whatever unwholesome mind states might have been habitual. All these internal barriers have been broken down by that constancy of inclining the heart to care. And we use that sequence of beings in each category to elicit increasingly deeper and more subtle layers of barriers and to work them away, that we then match by corresponding increases in the strength and momentum of the metta practice. And we start, you know, with this just this really simple wish, may I be happy. And then it expands outwards. And in this way, really profoundly difficult emotions and habits that arise in relationship with others are diffused. And the heart can be healed from whatever conditioning we carry at a really deep level. It's easy for me to say this. And I just want to say for those of you who are new to this practice, who have a well-developed vipassana practice, if you're experiencing doubt or aversion, and I've heard a few people reflect about this in the last couple of days, if you're experiencing doubt or aversion about metta bhavana as opposed to vipassana, please know the way it opens is mysterious, and this purification is in itself also mysterious. This profound purification often happens without us knowing really what's going on in there. And it can be quite amazing to go out of a metta retreat where we just think, oh, I've just been repeating this phrase and nothing's happening. And then we go out into our lives and we find, much to our surprise, we're not so triggered by something that we were triggered by before. Or something really simple can happen. For example, we're driving our car down the road, somebody cuts in front of us, and we might have said before, oh, you know, I don't have to say it, what we might have done. But the first thing that goes through the mind is, wow, may you be safe and protected. May you get to your destination safely, driving like that. And it's a metta wish. This is quite profound, actually. This is, we don't know what's going on in there. So please, 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 don't judge your practice if it just seems like you're repeating this phrase over and over again and quote unquote, nothing is happening. And another thing that people can think with this practice is, well, if I just sit here and wish myself well, especially at the beginning when we're working with ourselves, it's so self-centered. But in fact, metta practice has nothing to do with narcissism or self-aggrandizement. And what's so interesting is when psychoneurobiologists take people in MRIs and they have them doing metta practice, they find that the metta bhavana lights up the areas of the brain that are associated with emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence is never about self-centeredness. It's about inclusivity. It's about understanding common humanity. So it activates these areas in the mind and the heart and opens the heart to all beings. And it creates a real inner sense of wholeness that deeply cares about whatever is arising in our experience, regardless of whether we like it or we don't like it, regardless of what we want to change about ourselves. There's an acceptance that comes. And then the practice opens that acceptance out to everyone. Somebody yesterday was saying, you know, it's so amazing. They were saying, oh, yeah, nothing's much happening. But, you know, the yogis when I came that really bothered me, they don't bother me anymore. That's exactly what the metta practice does. So it opens that caring and that friendliness out into everybody else and their innate desire to be well, to be happy, to be peaceful. And in a mysterious way, this is part of why I keep using that word mysterious, but sometimes what can happen as we do this practice, as this purification proceeds, is people, when this self-centeredness drops away and when those barriers have broken down between me and everybody else, between us and all beings, the mind can spontaneously drop into profound states of wisdom, particularly about anatta, not self. Because this is where the metta takes us. It takes us to this place where it's like, well, this place of common humanity, common beingness, where this ego kind of armor is no longer there. And we understand the commonality of all living beings. So we start where we are, right here, right now. And the goal of loving kindness is actually not to think that we have to have this profound love for ourselves before we can love others. But it's really to cultivate a sense of balance, of resilience, spaciousness, of ease. This friendly ability to be with, this friendly interest in whatever is arising in ourselves and what is happening with relationship to other beings, no matter what. So the purification of metta bhavana, first at the level of the hindrances, and then at the level of latent tendencies, and as a sequential kind of revelation of how we react to others in our lives. And as you all know by now, it's not necessarily an easy process. And this is where patience and gentle persistence are important. And when we're faced with both those hindrances and the many deep undercurrents in the mind and heart, it's really important to remember not to push them away, not to try to overcome them, or try to get through them, or try to create the loving kindness. This is really way too much force. We can't create loving kindness. Loving kindness is the natural expression of the pure mind and heart. It arises by itself. And really all we need to do, moment to moment to moment, is to create the conditions for that to arise. Plant the seed of loving kindness. This is why the continuity of saying the phrase over and over and over again is so important. Keeping that going every waking moment. Even if it feels like we're just saying words, we can't connect. It's okay, just keep going. Do the best you can to connect with the meaning, with the being for whom you're radiating loving kindness. And just keep going. And these difficult states of mind and heart, we acknowledge them. We use them. And we put them in the background and keep the cultivation of the metta bhava, the metta bhavana. We keep that in the foreground. And often, really, it feels like including that. No part left out, really, in this practice. Yes, this dosa has come up, but may I be well, happy, and peaceful anyway, including whatever hindrance or latent tendency is arising in your loving kindness. This process works, it's reliable. Regardless of who we are, regardless of whatever habits we may have, whether we have a habit of ill will, whether we have a habit of greed or fear or delusion, whatever conditioning we bring, whether we think we deserve it or not. When the metta begins to pick up momentum and become strong, no unwholesome mind states can coexist with it. This is the true power of metta. And this purity of heart that comes from metta bhavana can't help but directly benefit both ourselves and the people around us and the world around us. So I want to close with a quote from His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, that I really, really love. And it's not directly about metta bhavana itself, but it applies. He was talking to a group of school children in Vancouver, and this was his advice to them. He said, "No matter what is going on, never give up. Develop the heart. Too much energy in your country is spent developing the mind instead of the heart. Be compassionate, not just to your friends, but to everyone. Work for peace in your heart and peace in the world. And I say again, never give up. No matter what is going on around you, never give up." So, thank you for your kind attention, and may the persistence and sincerity of your metta practice bear beautiful fruit of kindness and compassion that touches everybody around you. So I also want to give you continuing instructions from Sayadaw. As Ariya said, today he would move you on to the next category. So he's asked us to relay this instruction to you. So you have been, first you've worked with yourself and then with a respected person. And then in the last days with these two respected persons. So today, from now on, begin to practice and radiate loving kindness to this category of the dear friend. And as I said a bit in the talk, this is a person you know, that you're close to, that you love naturally. It could be a family member, a dear friend, somebody who you see the goodness in very easily, and you feel a lot of natural affection for this person. So begin with one dear friend. And so just as before, when you did a half an hour of one respected person, or a half an hour for yourself and then the respected person, then a half an hour with one respected person and then another, now take a half an hour to radiate loving kindness to the easiest respected person, where the metta arises most spontaneously. And then switch after that, after a half an hour, to the dear friend. And take the next half of the sitting or the walking period to radiate loving kindness to this dear friend. And in the general activities, and if you're walking around the forest path, please radiate loving kindness to all beings. And really, with this practice, this is Sayadaw's instruction. If he has given you an individual instruction that's different, follow that. And please understand that this is a very flexible practice. So if you encounter any difficulty with this new category, something is coming up and you just can't get any traction with the metta. You try. And maybe there's some hindrances coming up and you are not successful in being able to even connect with the metta phrase. After you have been persistent for a while and you're not getting any traction, then you can go to where it's easy. Go back to the respected person, or even to yourself. And then when the metta again becomes strong and powerful, then you can switch back to the friend, the dear friend. So it's not a fixed thing. It's not a fixed instruction. It's very fluid, depending on what's arising for you and depending on your specific situation and the practice. May you all have a wonderful afternoon and evening of practice. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.